Hello and welcome to the Brothers Geek Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Patrick Schmaltz, with my two brothers, Christopher Schmaltz. Hello, Christopher.
Hi.
My other brother, Andrew. Hello, Andrew.
Hi. I give him highs because I'm better.
He's better.
More highs because better.
We're brothers. We're geeks. We talk about geeky things. This is episode number 154. We're recording this Sunday, December 6th. It's already December 6th. We're going to talk about Mandalorian. We're continuing our Mandalorian discussion, among other things. But main stuff we're going to be talking about is Chapter 14, The Tragedy, when the episode is called. So if you haven't watched The Tragedy, go watch that. If you don't care about spoilers, thank you for staying.
Definitely from the perspective of Arsenal fans, goons, today was a tragedy for you, and I sincerely feel for you. Today on the North London Derby, definitely a tragedy today. So I don't feel the least bit.
You know, it's a tragedy, the history of your entire club with no championships.
Oh, God.
That's okay.
See,
that's okay. That's the true tragedy here. Win a championship, have some success at something.
That is not. You know that that's not true. Well, I goons are ignorant, and so I know that.
Do you have any silverware? Do you have any silverware?
We absolutely, in the history of the club, we absolutely have silverware. Not a lot in recent years.
What did you win? Like the group of eight championship from 1907? Or I mean, is that the silverware you have? You mean did you win some like exhibition match where some lord again provided you with his hereditary forks or something? Is that what you won in 1894?
When
you like cleared out a cricket pitch so you guys can play the first ever soccer match ever played? You won that championship?
Wow.
Is that what it was?
So Mandalorian, little Grogu decides to go sit on a ball and
he sits on a magic force ball.
He sits on a magic force ball.
No, it's actually not a magic force ball. It's actually appears to be like a rock.
It absolutely is. It's part of
a half circle.
Yeah, they go to Stonehenge. Yep. What's the name of this planet, Andrew? Do you know the name of this planet?
Typhon.
He always knows this shit. So they fly into Typhon. We get a cool moment of him having to use his jetpack to fly the little sucker up there. And he puts him on the rock. He starts to meditate. Shit goes down. And then, Boba Fett shows up. And what was the
did
name
you
of that got,
did, but hold, before we even get there.
Yeah. Okay.
Just like the Slave One, like flying into.
I immediately said Slave One.
Oh my God!
Out of it, the absolutely distinctive Slave One sound.
Nerd moment was
great.
So awesome.
I actually called out and I said, "Oh shit, Slave One."
I said, "Oh shit, Slave One."
I did too.
Yeah,
I totally did. We were watching it last night or Friday night, and I was like, oh my God, Slave One, that's Boba Fett's ship.
Boba Fett's ship, dude, it was crazy.
Hannah was like, how do you know that ship? watching it with somebody who is not, she's like level two, so she knows this stuff like a little bit,
That's got to be fun.
I'm just like, man, that ship was dope when I was a kid, man. And, it's in the prequels too, Jango Fett's flying around in the thing. And there's actually one of my favorite scenes from all the prequels. The prequels are mostly trash, but the scene where Jango Fett chasing Obi-Wan in that asteroid field is like highly entertaining.
That's a fun dogfight.
Yeah, it's very entertaining Star Wars moment. And Slave One just being, and like finally seeing like Slave One do some cool shit, because like in the originals, it just flies around and looks cool. Doesn't really do anything.
Well, we barely see it take off and land from Cloud City.
And Boba Fett is really smart, and he follows the Millennium Falcon to Cloud City.
Yeah.
He's like drifting in the debris too. So you see him following along. Slave One, Boba Fett shows up. What was the name of that character, the sharpshooter character, Andrew?
Fennec Shand.
Fennec Shand, very Star Wars name.
Played by Ming-Na, who is across the entire of the Marvel Universe. She was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for seven seasons. She's voiced. I mean, she's like a Disney MVP, dude.
She signed her soul away to Disney, just like Jon Favreau
Disney,
has.
Disney MVP. You're right.
She's a Disney MVP. She was the original voice of Mulan in the animated film. The nice dialogue. Call. She didn't do any of the singing. But yeah, so she's been part of the Disney universe, and now then the Marvel universe, and now she is.
Right,
you know, part of the Star Wars universe as well. So
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, and it's like I remember her being left to die, and then if you got like a really good memory, there was someone who walked up upon her character at the end of that episode, and there was like, who was that? What was that? So obviously that was Boba Fett. If you know remember that, it was like this little scene, and like of course Star Wars fans like analyze the shit out of it. Like, who was that?
Who just shot out of everything, frame by frame, looking for
yes, frame by frame, slow motion. Let's see if we can see Luke Skywalker in the background.
Basically, yeah.
So basically, he shows up, and then the Empire shows up, and then they get into like basically a 30-minute battle to defend Baby Yoda from. You know, Boba Fett wants his armor back. And there's this really interesting conversation about like Boba Fett's not Mandalorian. Jango Fett's not Mandalorian. They were given this armor by the Mandalorians. That's part of their lore. That's always been there. And I love that. That's like callback to that. That's the conversation. Further... This has been like a theme of the season too, of like Mando running into Mandalorians that he doesn't deem as Mandalorians, like the Mandalorian that takes off Boba Fett's helmet, that's Timothy Oliphant, and then Bo-Katan with her different ideology, and now Boba Fett with like he is a what Mando deems him as a foundling. So it's sort of this weird. Mandalorians are kind of
it's the building on the theme, right, of Mando learning that this is the way is not the only way, that his rigidity is being challenged left and right in terms of his understanding of the universe,
right,
is
right.
being challenged left and right, and he is discovering that there is many paths to interact with the world, and
right.
you know, it's we said this a couple episodes ago. This really feels like a season that's about undoing religious indoctrination for Mando,
because that's
what it is. He was raised in a cult.
Well, I was just going to say, like, he obviously was raised by the most like hardcore sect of the Mandalorians, the Death Watch guys, what's left of the Death Watch guys.
Yeah.
And that's like this interesting idea of like, and honestly, can I get a little internet snarky for a second? Is this Star Wars' way, a very clever way, mind you, of retconning and rewriting why their Mandalorian lore is all screwed up? Like, why did Boba Fett keep his helmet on? Why does Jango Fett take his helmet off?
There's never a plan. They don't plan these things out 50 years in advance. George Lucas didn't write down and say, these are the rules for what a Mandalorian. He didn't fully realize. He didn't have a Bible for what all aspects of the universe 50 some odd years ago when he really started to create all this shit.
Boba Fett, they made it up as they went along. I think Boba Fett was unexpectedly popular. I think that like he just looked really cool and everybody kind of like gravitated to it. It was like Boba Fett's dope. Do they even say his name in the movies? Like. Maybe, like, in Empire Strikes Back, do they say Boba Fett? Or is it just because he was, like, a cool toy? He's a dude in a suit of armor. He's got a jetpack.
He had a toy. His first appearance was in the Star Wars the much-derided Star Wars Holiday
Special.
Oh, that's
his first appearance?
He's an animated version.
He appears animated,
and it's, like, a short animated film or whatever. And then he shows up in The Empire Strikes Back. I don't know if they say his name in The Empire Strikes Back. He's clearly a named character. He's got lines. He interacts with Darth Vader. And then Darth Vader just might call him Bounty Hunter a couple of times.
I'm racking my brain. I don't think they say his name.
That's what I'm saying. It's like this really weird. They
definitely say it in Return of the Jedi.
Oh, because
then he hits him with a freaking gaffy stick, and he goes flying into the Sarlacc.
Boba Fett is the first of many Star Wars, very cool Star Wars characters that gets killed very easily.
Right. Well, that was the ongoing joke.
Clearly not killed,
and they're retconning his death. Like obviously, you know, he's dead until this season, and now they're, you know, they're sort of like rewriting all the past mistakes. Is what I'm trying to say.
I think in a larger sense, Jon Favreau, and he said that. Yeah, I've said you guys got to watch the Mandalorian gallery. That's on season one. Disney. Yeah, you got to watch it because really Jon Favreau is making a very conscious effort to tie in multiple aspects of the Star Wars fandom and universe into The Mandalorian, like obscure references to the games, obscure references to kind of minor background things.
Yeah, the Krayt Dragon movies. Egg. Yeah,
like exactly. Typhon.
Yeah.
Yeah, the planet planet Typhon appears in one of the original. I think it's Star Wars: The Old Republic. It's like a central planet. Like you go there and you have a quest that you quest at when you in the games. So like in that particular game, he's Typhon making an effort to pull in all of that.
I'm here for all of that.
Absolutely. I think it's great.
Yeah.
There's just so much lore that they're like pulling from that like Disney has been like kind of like, oh, we're that's not canon anymore, but that still exists. So it's like they're gonna pick and choose. And we talked about this when we talked about Thrawn in the last episode. It's sort of like, okay, this like in the Star Wars extended universe, Boba Fett lives. He is around in the books. He survives the Sarlacc.
He has entire book. I mean, they flesh out the entire Mandalorian culture. Yeah. He eventually becomes the Mando. I mean, in the books, the title the Mando, he's the leader of the Mandalorians. Like they have a central culture. And he becomes like their king. Yeah.
Oh wow.
I mean, he lives into his 70s or 80s.
Yeah.
And in the Star Wars universe, you know, you can live to be 150 or whatever.
Well, are humans humans in this universe, are they age like normal humans? So he's got to be
Han Solo and Leia because they keep the timeline of the Legends universe pretty consistent in terms of our understanding of things. They'll be like, okay, this book is taking place 30 years after Return of the Jedi, so Luke's in his mid-50s, give or take, but middle age, I mean, you're middle age until you're in your 90s, essentially. I mean, Han Solo's in his 70s or 80s, and he's still spry, and he's still kicking ass by the end of the books. The Legends universe, before they discontinued all of that. Yeah, Solo is, you know, he's lost a step or two, but he's still a badass. So
maybe I'm skipping ahead too much. But
in canon universe, however, because this Mandalorian is set 5 years after Return of the Jedi, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's 5 years after the Boba Fett going into the Sarlacc pit,
right? Yep. Right? And he looks kind of scarred up, like he maybe started to get digested a little bit.
We don't
bit.
Know if he had all those scars from prior or whatever, because we never saw him. But he looks definitely like he's been alive for a long time. So
he's been through some shit.
And yep. we got a glimpse of him like kicking ass here for a minute. You know, he gets
more than a glimpse,
back.
Man. He lays waste.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is definitely a guy who was raised
by Mandalorian, who's a badass, who's got Mandalorian armor. So it's sort of like Mando's always been like our big hero, but like I mean, Boba Fett is like a seasoned warrior. You know,
so the chatter that the commentary that I've seen is just what you said, Patrick, about how Boba Fett was this awesome looking character. He shows up. He's kind of like this silent badass who's in the background. He captures Han Solo, and then he's in Jabba's palace. And, you know, he jetpacks in to kind of take on Luke in Return of the Jedi, but he gets smoked relatively easily, and he gets, you know, swallowed by the Sarlacc. He, you know, and we said it about Darth Maul. He's such a cool-looking character, and he gets killed in the very first movie. Wouldn't have been cool to see him in more stuff. And Captain Phasma in the sequel trilogy looking so awesome, and then she doesn't really end up having amazing moments or whatever. Would it have been cooler to see her do more stuff? Yes. Boba Fett's kind of the original joke of that in the Star Wars universe. And now in this
not a joke. I took that shit seriously, dude.
Yeah.
I was a young Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
And I've been a Star Wars fan my entire life since I'm like essentially conscious. Right.
Yeah.
And that is the, not a joke. That was the only disappointment. And I've said this before, but the only disappointment about the original trilogy was the fact that how easy Boba Fett went out.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It was like, I didn't have anything negative to say about any of the movies except for that. That was the only thing for the bulk of my Star Wars fandom.
Half-blind Han Solo in the back, and his
really ultra lame.
But
really,
they are making a Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni, and then Robert Rodriguez, the director.
See, this is why I connect with Mandalorian so much, because Favreau is me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
Dave Filoni and Favreau are
Filoni. They're both of them. They are, because they are sort of around my age, right?
Yeah,
and so they have the exact same experience. We all had the exact same experience because Boba Fett was so freaking cool.
Yeah,
and the fact that he went out like that, it has stuck in the craw of all of those original Star Wars fans who were children when the first movie came out. And watch it in the theater. They are me, and so I have a kinship with them because they exactly have the same emotions I'm having about this. And so it's a beautiful thing that they brought it back, and I'm sure it made them feel very.
And we finally get to see Boba Fett stomp ass. You know,
right. Truly, he is a badass. That's why he was the premier bounty hunter, right?
Yes, yeah, so, absolutely.
There's just a story moment that's kind of like what Hannah mentioned this actually. So I'm just going to where Mando is going to defend Grogu while he's meditating. And then he like goes away to like defend him. But then Grogu like stops and finally like lays down. And then that's when the droids come, these first droids that we haven't seen before. They kind of look like Darth Vader helmets, by the way. Did you notice that?
Droids?
Are they droids? Yeah, like what are they exactly? They look like they had droid legs. So
they definitely feel like droids. Who knows if they've got some kind of cybernetic, you know, organic components or whatever, but they definitely have the vibe of being that's obviously existed in the Star Wars universe for a long time. We haven't really seen the Empire use droids.
Uh-huh. Rogue One, they added those
the security droids,
which is like Alan Tudyk voice
K-3SO or something.
Yeah, great character, really interesting.
He's a lot of fun.
But so you're speaking to something else I had in my notes was, Boba Fett says the Empire is back. I'm looking at their ship, and it's sort of like. It's like one of the Star Destroyers. I don't know if it's like a.
It's not an Imperial Star Destroyer. It's considered a light cruiser. It appears more in Rebels and it's definitely in Rebels.
It's like a battleship level, right?
Yeah,
right,
but it's not an Imperial Star Destroyer. It's not that level that
looks,
we know from the trilogy.
It looks kind of that shape, but it's not that
smaller.
Smaller. So, but like he says, the Empire is back. This is sort of like, do you guys feel like this is like touches of like maybe this the beginnings of the First Order? Because the First Order takes place like 20 years later, but.
Oh, yeah, it's the seeds for it. No question about it.
Right, right. Is it going to lead? Are they leading to that? I mean, maybe it's too far out for it to be the First Order.
Well, there's in canon, and Chris, you've read these, haven't you? There's in canon books that talk about the origins of the First Order.
Not all of them, but I don't remember which one. It was the one that was focused on Princess Leia, General Leia.
Yeah.
Oh.
So there's in canon novels, you know, Disney canon novels that exist that talk about the origins of the First Order.
Yeah, and it's 100% remnants of the Empire that really like go away, disappear, but it's mm-hmm. all remnants of the Empire go away, disappear, and then return as the First Order. Yeah.
Huh. So yeah, there's a little bit of touches on did Grogu, there's questions we have, like, did Grogu contact a Jedi with this? How much of the Empire is back? Because they leave with Grogu. Is that the tragedy that the episode title is referring to?
And also the tragedy of the Razor Crest getting blown up from orbit.
Oh yes, yes.
That was sad.
Yes, and the only surviving right, and the only surviving piece is the Beskar spear survives, but the Razor Crest just blew up.
That was a nice touch that he searches through the rubble to find the spear. No, he knowing that it's not going to get destroyed. So
exactly,
yep.
Interesting.
That would survive. So
yep.
Yeah, no, it's I don't think it's funny because really the episode boils down to being about a 20-minute action scene.
Yeah.
With kind of interspersed with kind of moments of character and moments of dialogue, obviously, that really give us context and backstory, more backstory and context about the life of Boba Fett. I mean, he only speaks for maybe a few minutes in this whole episode, but the fact that the actor who played Jango and so now cool. is playing Boba as this older man who has been through all that he's been through, but keeping in the continuity of the Star Wars universe of Boba Fett being a clone, an unaltered clone of Jango, and him grows up like a normal, quote unquote, normal human would. And the same actor playing him, playing two different characters, is great.
Well, and so, that actor does the voice of all the clones in the Clone Wars movies and in the Clone Wars cartoons. And they actually, like, the special editions, they went back and, like, added his voice to Boba Fett's.
Whoever the actor was that did the voiceover for Boba Fett in the original trilogy, they added Tamara Morrison, I think is the actor's name. They'd subbed his voice in, so
really cool. I'm glad to see him back, and it's interesting that it's cool. It's just cool to have him actually see his face, and yeah. Anyways,
well, and clearly he's going to be involved in whatever it is that they're going to do in order to recover Grogu, right?
Razor Crest is destroyed. They all hop in the Slave One, and so
he's
go
in the show. He's in the show.
How many episodes do we have left? Like, this is episode 6, right? Is it only 2 left, or are we?
It's only 2 left. I think they're doing 8 episode seasons.
Yeah. So
it's interesting. What also is interesting, and that I saw this. Someone reminded of this, some TikTok feed or Twitter feed or something. So this episode, the fact where they shot it, they definitely shot it. They shot it on location. I mean, the first season, they used a lot of rendering with a special kind of synthetic and alternate environment where they would render things on huge video walls to give the illusion of being in exteriors, but this is an exterior that's an actual place. Someone stumbled months and months ago when they were shooting this exterior with stormtroopers, someone stumbled upon this, took a picture, and posted it online as proof, because it was a bunch of stormtroopers like milling around in this like national park or something like that in California, and that came up on my feed again.
Oh yeah,
someone made that connection. That it's like, oh, the Mandalorian must be shooting an exterior because there's stormtroopers standing in the middle of this park, blah blah blah. Yeah, and that came up on my feed today. So it's like,
wow.
And harkening back to that, it was 7 or 8 months ago. It was right before the lockdown when we saw that. And now we're seeing kind of the end result of it. And I think on a purely artistic level, this episode looks fantastic. The setting, the natural lighting, the fact that they are shooting at an exterior, all the components of the battle and how they cut it all together. This is a really kind of, just in terms of filmmaking, is a really superior episode, I think.
And it's directed by Robert Rodriguez, which I mean, he's sort of gone the way of the crappy kid movie, but like, I think the man
has anyone ever even seen all the Spy Kids movies?
No, not a single moment of a
Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
Seen the first three. Yes, the answer is yes.
you've seen the Spy Kids movies, Christopher?
Absolutely, 100%.
He's a father.
What made you watch the Spy Kids movies?
My children were fans.
Okay,
There you go.
Yep.
So, did you ever watch Shark Boy and Lava Girl? Because they're making a sequel
absolutely.
To that. I've
seen that movie multiple times.
Oh, yes. Wow. Oh, God.
It is.
Okay.
It is high quality shit filmmaking.
talk about like ahead of his time. I mean, those movies probably look like cartoons now. They look like video games. But sort of like he was shooting.
It is painful. Yeah.
He was shooting actors in like just a green screen environment, like not actually shooting.
And if you watch it now, you are never not broken out of your suspension of disbelief.
That's awesome.
It's great. It's great.
That's really fun.
Cool. Anything else you guys want to mention about this episode? It's kind of a light episode, just Boba Fett and a little battle, and then Grogu gets taken away. So,
which I understand the need to sort of tee up the final conflict of the final two episodes, but a lot of it doesn't make a whole lot of sense from a Mando leaving Grogu up by himself up on the hill.
And then a little bit of hand waving about like, oh, take off your jetpack so you can't fly away.
If he hadn't done that,
then like all of that like tension would have been gone.
I'm like, put your jetpack on, dude. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Why are you running uphill? Put your jetpack back on.
Yeah.
And I notice at the end in the final shots, he does not have it on his back. So hopefully he picked it up. But right. it's a detail that I was paying close attention to because it's like, dude, why are you taking that off?
Yeah.
He could have flown up and chased those guys flying if he had had it on him. So it's sort of
and
like
he did not have it. He did not have it at the very end of the episode on his
well,
back.
Well, yeah, they've been kind of like he's got it on. He's got it off this whole season. Like he's walked into bars with it not on his back. He's like,
yeah. So that that may be totally he picked it up and it's in the ship. Right. Or
yeah. Whatever. Right.
So
right.
That's fine. I'm totally cool with that. If it reappears, because that's total that makes sense to me, but there's weakness in this episode because of some narrative choices that they made.
I agree with that. I think there are some kind of weaknesses,
they're relying on the oh holy shit it's Boba Fett, which is awesome for all of us, right? But as a cohesive like episode,
on the weaker end, it's definitely on the weaker end. Yeah. Like, why wouldn't you like Boba Fett and that other character? Like, they got the stormtroopers handled. Yeah. Oh, I guess he tries to go to save her to help her out. But like, why would he leave Grogu? I think he would just stay up there. I don't know. That's a little weird. That's a weird choice.
Yeah. I mean, it could be. I mean, we could do. Explaining away stuff and say, he's maybe Mando still isn't the best dad ever. Maybe
we haven't really, we haven't really talked about. I mean, the end of the episode is Grogu in an Imperial like prison cell, tossing ragdoll stormtroopers,
which is Moff Gideon clearly enjoying it.
And well, and doing it on purpose, right? Forcing him. Somehow the kid was provoked.
Yeah.
Into using his powers. And then all as a test or all as a sort of developing. I don't know. I'm sure we will learn, right?
Yeah.
But and then the firing up of the dark saber. I mean, how can you not enjoy that key moment, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dark saber is a pretty awesome looking.
Oh, and then like know the episode ends with him going back to Cara Dune asking for help to track down this person. He's trying to track down Bill Burr's character from season one.
Yep. Callback to season one.
Because he's Mayfeld. An expert in Republic or old Empire technology. Is that the gist that's why he wants him?
Yeah, connections and to enable them to find the ship, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Which, you know, I guess episode 7 is going to be a bust that dude out of prison kind of episode, which
yeah.
I mean, definitely Mando's getting the band back together so that they can try to rescue the kid.
Well, like, is that guy going to help him? Mando put him in prison.
Well, yeah, it definitely it's the theme of, you know, a band of outlaws having a common purpose, whether or not they can get him to buy into whatever they're doing.
Exactly.
You know, that Western theme of
he's not like
he's dangerous, but we need him.
Yeah. He's not a friend of theirs that he's asking for help. He's a guy that Mando portrayed. So
yeah, exactly.
I don't know if it's gonna
Mando's sense of honor from the first season compelling him to do what he did. And how that might come back and bite him in the ass because he needs him. He does have such thin characterization. I mean, he appears in the Clone Wars a couple of times as a young clone trying to seek revenge on Mace Windu. Oh, yeah. No, he has an arc in the first couple seasons of the Clone Wars where he shows up. He's being cared for by Jango Fett's old bounty hunting
crew. I just finished
crew.
Season one, and he does not appear in season one, so it must be season
two. Yeah, season two or season three that he shows up. But anyway, so the trivia is this. So we know in Return of the Jedi that Boba Fett is swallowed by the Sarlacc.
Mm.
Yep.
The Sarlacc's location is a four-word title that C-3PO says out loud when he's announcing where they're going with Jabba the Hutt. What is the four-word name of the Sarlacc's home?
Oh my gosh. Ooh. Four words.
It's four words.
I was going to say like the Dune Sea, but I don't think that's...
I mean, the Dune Sea is a huge part of Tatooine, but there's a very specific location where the Sarlacc lives.
Okay, hold on. I'm trying to replay that scene in my head right now.
Yeah, I'm doing the same thing.
Once you guys hear it, you will automatically know the scene and you will see it in your head.
It's not coming readily, so I'll give up.
My guess is going to be three of the words are the pit of. So the pit
despair?
Of, no. Pit of.
Don't even think about trying to escape.
Princess Bride. Yeah. I don't remember. Go ahead.
All right. The home of the Sarlacc is the Great Pit of Carcoon.
Oh,
that's five words, dude.
The Great
Fail. Trivia fail.
Carcoon. Great Pit of Carcoon.
The Great Pit of Carcoon.
The isn't capitalized. It's Great Pit of Carcoon. It's a proper noun.
Fine.
The Great.
Okay, I got two of them right.
Pit of. He did.
Pit of.
Pit of.
Almost.
Pit of. Great Pit of Carcoon. And you're exactly right, Andrew. I can hear him saying it.
Is it like a pit of Carcoon because of the Sarlacc, or is it
no?
Like, is it like, is this place
the Sarlacc moved into it?
Oh.
Yep. The Sarlacc is a mobile, I mean, it is a predator.
So the pit of Carcoon existed before the Sarlacc went in.
What is What is the carcoon? What is it? What is that?
Who knows? Some goofy thing that George Lucas invented.
I'm gonna have to do some
oh my God,
research.
It comes up as a Google search. All right, we need it for the listeners.
Yes.
The Great Pit. This is all credit to StarWarsFandom.com.
Yeah.
Great Pit of Carcoon, Carkoon, was a large sand basin located within the Dune Sea on the desert planet of Tatooine. Inside the pit was known as the Sarlacc. That's it. Wow, it's pretty weak.
Yeah.
No explanation of the history of the Great Pit of Carcoon.
Nope. George Lucas just, named something.
He just wrote Carcoon. Whoa, whoa, whoa. That's a cool Star
Wars
name.
And the quote from canon is not the Great Pit. It's, "You will therefore be taken to the Dune Sea and cast into the Pit of Carcoon, the nesting place of the all-powerful Sarlacc."
Oh, that was good.
C-3PO,
like,
man.
There.
Terrible. So dramatic. Will you be slowly digested over a thousand years?
Let's talk through that. How does that work if you're a living creature and you're being digested for a thousand years?
Yeah, is the
alive?
Maybe it, like, puts you into a some kind of stasis where it just feeds on your body.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
The logic. Sounds really cool. The
digestive juices put you in stasis and keep you alive.
Seriously.
Oh, that's awful.
That's why Boba is all scarred up, because he had, like, he was all, like, getting digested, but somehow he got himself out of there.
Poisoned digestive juices.
Yeah, he got out of there.
Okay. if you'd like to help Andrew with this
trivia,
if you'd like to help Andrew with this trivia, you should email him at kingofthenorth52@gmail.com. Email the podcast, brothersgeekpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, brothers_geek@twitter.com, brothersgeek.com, brothersgeek do stuff on Instagram, brothersgeek schmaltz on YouTube.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening, everyone.
Thank you.
Wear a mask, be a hero.
There it is.